Welcome to another democratic episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, our topic is Knights of the Old Republic by John Jackson Miller and Brian Ching. And now, the cast begins.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another Sithy episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hello.
Who is healthy, and David.
Hello.
Who is recovering from illness.
Yes.
So if he hears sniffles, that's why.
Yes, let's just get that out of the way.
So this week, we're starting off our Star Wars series, because we've all been obsessed with Tor lately, and that's what happens when there's a new video game out. And we're starting off with Knights of the Old Republic from 2006. It's like the first six issues in Volume 1, right?
Six? And Issue 0.
And Issue 0, that's right, okay.
Well, the trade we have has Issue 0.
Yes, so we did read Issue
which
0.
Which is like a half issue, really.
Yeah.
This is written by John Jackson Miller with art by Brian Ching. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
This is actually, I think, the first Star Wars comic I've ever read.
Really?
Really?
Really, really.
So how did you like it, then?
I like it. There's lightsabers. It's hard not to like it. It's got lightsabers.
But it has more than just lightsabers.
Yeah, you know what I like about it is because with a comic book like this, if it's not a movie, there's not a huge production budget behind it. So with something like a comic book, I can get the tale of the crappy Jedi who sucks at being a Jedi.
Love that.
Yeah, Zane's not, he's not that great at it.
And I like that because if you have an order of thousands and thousands of Jedi, some of them have got to suck, right? Mm-hmm. They can't all be awesome. And I like that. There's a crappy, bumbling Jedi.
I love how they keep phrasing it as, like, his unusual connection with the Force, too.
Yeah.
Because it's like, the Force kind of hates this guy.
Right? How did the Master phrase it? Like, it's proof that the Force has a sense of humor?
Yes.
I like that. I like that phrasing.
Well, it's like he doesn't really know how to use the Force that well, but the Force will never, like, let him die. So he's, like, lucky.
Yeah.
Even if it's super hard, he won't get killed.
Well, it was like when they were on the Rogue Moon for the test, trying to get through the asteroid field. He was like, no. He's too lucky to get killed by the asteroid, but he will get killed walking off the edge of a crater.
Yeah, he'll like trip and break his neck. Yeah. They said
he's dumb enough to do that and have that happen to him, but the Force makes him lucky enough that he'll walk through this. It'll take him forever, but he'll do it.
And he took like.
Half a day.
Way longer.
Half right. a day, and everybody else did it in, like, an hour.
Or, like, everyone took half a day. He took the entire day, right?
Yeah, something
like that.
He was,
like, the last one there. And LB walked off a cliff, kind of. Not really.
That was... this whole comic, even though there's a serious subplot, or serious main plot going on here, LB was really sad.
Yeah.
That moment when, like, the Master makes LB jump off a cliff, basically. That's fucked up.
They actually... Yeah. Turn up, like, using it for comedy most of the time. Because in future traits, mm-hmm. what they do here is, like, they'll say, LB, Master Lucian is in that building. Maybe you should try to destroy it. And LB will think, like, they're telling the truth, so he'll, like, start blasting at the building.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Or they'll be like, LB, Master Lucian wants this guy dead. You need to protect him. And LB will, like, defend the guy like, with everything he's got.
I don't like that, because they make a point to say it's just a loader droid. It's kind of stupid.
Well, he's gullible. He's just very single-minded on, like, hating Master Lucian.
And then there's the other main character in here, which is the Snivian, Marn Herogriff, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you guys like him?
He's okay in this, but he gets, his character development keeps going, and I think he gets better in future traits. But in this case, I don't think you're supposed to be too sympathetic to him at this point.
He feels too much like a one-trick pony to me. He feels too stock character in the beginning. Hey, look at me, I'm dealing stuff around. At least,
but
like,
he has a heart.
Yeah, but at least the shitty Jedi is a character that's not stock.
Yeah.
You know, there's no pre-established shitty character, but there is a pre-established shady character with a heart of gold.
He's the Han Solo of this? Is that what you're saying?
No, Han Solo is more charismatic.
No, he's more like the Lando Calrissian. I'd say. Yeah. Like, he's, like, way douchier way, to start yeah, with, and douchier, then he comes in.
Way less suave, but, yeah. Shady guy, but, you know, he's not bad. He's just shady. And I like that he calls Zane intern.
Yes.
Because it's really what he is. He's an intern Jedi. Yeah. He does all the prep work.
Well, I like the way he calls him on the last page, too.
What was that?
He calls him henchman.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. He hires him.
That's right.
I love it, having a Jedi, a failed Padawan henchman.
This seems like it would be pretty useful to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he still knows how to use a lightsaber, and he still is attuned to the Force, even though he's not kind a Jedi.
Well, I mean, we saw him, he used the Force to stop Marn from escaping at one point.
Yeah. I mean, he's not entirely inept. Just yeah. mostly inept.
He's no Yoda.
Yeah.
No.
Man, when I first saw Marn, I was like, fucker stole my name. Because I'm Griff in, like, everything
yeah, Griff,
that I
Griffa,
play.
Yeah, Griffa. Griffomia.
Yeah.
And they call him the Griff.
Yeah, and Griffa is my smuggler in Tor right now.
That's right. Everybody's going to
so
think.
So I'm, like, going
Everybody
around.
Everybody who's read this is going to think that you wish you could have played a Snivian.
No relation. Oh, man. So what do we think of, like, the douchey consular council?
I don't like them.
They get so much better, too, after the... I almost wish that we had read all 50 issues, even though that would be quite the task.
Well, we did just read 52.
Yeah.
This felt so short after that, I just want to say. So short.
But the, like, the development they put into each of these characters is really, really fun.
Yeah, I think the tough thing that we're going to have, especially for Jen and I who've read past this, is talking about... It's trying to focus on this because,
okay.
like, this is a really good introduction to the main characters. And there's even more characters that get introduced that become part of, like, their little crew.
Yeah.
And
well, there's a bunch of people that get dropped hints of that you know are going to come back in. Like Shad's family, mm-hmm. I get the feeling will come back. Like, the sister, because they make a point out of her. And the guy in the beginning, Squint, I have a feeling is going to come back somehow because...
Yeah.
Why introduce a character? Why give that character a name? And why give him an interaction if he's never going to come back?
Yeah, you're certainly right. Those characters do come back. And there's mm-hmm. some characters that we haven't seen that play a big part in this. Like, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but... I mean, it is, kind of. But there's I forget what his name is, but they... a Mandalorian becomes part of their crew.
Yeah.
Well, that makes pretty badass.
That makes sense. I mean, they're in the middle of the Mandalorian War at this point, aren't they? It's...
Yeah, well, it's gearing up at this point.
Okay.
But the Jedi haven't become involved.
So, about the... I don't know. Lucien just seems like a giant asshole, and he's collected a team of other asshole-ish-minded people so that they can do an asshole thing.
They have a... I mean... they do have kind of good reason to be afraid. They're just, I think, way too egotistical.
Yeah, it's weird, because in the beginning, I have a lot of reverence for Master Lucien because he's a master of the Force, and Zane has reverence for him because he's Zane's master. But then as I go in and you hear more of Lucien speak on his own, he just turns so much more of a dick. Like, he's so arrogant. That arrogance that becomes the downfall of the Jedi in Episode 3, that arrogance that causes them all to fall, like, this guy... is the pure embodiment of it. He's the epitome of the Jedi arrogance, I think.
Well, they're so sure of themselves that when they have this vision on the Rogue Moon, they're like, it's got to be one of these inept kids. Well, I mean, the other ones aren't inept. Only Zane is. That they just killed these kids, and I mean, it can't be. None of them. I mean, we don't know for sure if they were right or not, but killing a bunch of children is the wrong thing to do.
I don't see how that could be right. Take them out of school, whatever, do something else, but I don't see how that's the light decision to do.
Yeah, their decision was rash, and...
And I'm wondering, they didn't even talk to the Jedi Council about it, did they?
Well, they talked to somebody on Coruscant. They're like, oh, we have to call Coruscant. And, I mean, they reveal who that person is in later issues. But you're right, I mean... We don't know if they are getting their directive from somebody. I mean, it kind of seems like even the person they're talking to doesn't necessarily agree with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get that, like, Lucien's like, well, we're going to do it anyway kind of thing.
Yeah.
We don't have time. We don't have time to to debate this.
It just feels like they would have called the Yoda about it. Or something, you know?
Well, reasonable people would. But yeah. these guys are not reasonable. Yeah.
What bothers me about it is they're like, oh, it's someone in a red suit. Like, those are standard issue Republic spacesuits. They could be anyone.
Why does it have to be those kids down there? I mean, maybe you... The other thing is that we're cutting out is that these people are seers of the Force, and they're supposedly some of the best at seeing the future and feeling the Force for its ability to predict events to come. So maybe they have a sense of what the Force is trying to tell them more than what we get from their vision. But all you have to do is be a little bit skeptical to know that they're being really dumb.
Well, I think, like, one thing from the movie is that Yoda says over and over again when people are, like, looking for the Force, he's like, the Force is, or not the Force, the future is just feelings. Like, you get flashes of stuff, and you can't take it literally, necessarily. And these people take it literally. They're like, oh, we all saw a guy in a red suit. There's four people in red suits right there. Let's go kill them.
Yeah.
And this is what felt like a really rough patch in the writing to me. And it almost felt, like, too convenient for the plot. Because the thing is, the whole time they're being like, oh, guys in red suits, they are saying, oh, Force visions are really unclear. Force visions are often symbolic. Force visions are not literal. Like, they say it themselves. And then they're like, well, we should kill them anyway.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I think that's... I don't know if that's a weakness in the writing, necessarily. I mean, I guess it kind of is, because the point of doing that is to show how bad these Jedi Masters are. And so maybe that wasn't the best way to go about it, but, you know, this, for some reason, this is the way that this decided to go. And
I'm not so sure that I want to entirely blame the writing for that, because part of what makes the Jedi who they are is their idea that they are always right. You know? That's just something that makes them who they are. And that's the reason that they became extinct.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were so convinced they were right. They're so convinced they're doing the right thing. They're so convinced that no way in hell there could be a Sith in the Senate, because it's where we are. It's just that arrogance, that's their weakness. And it, for these people who are supposedly the best of the best to reflect it to such a degree doesn't seem like too much of a stretch. I think it's maybe overshowing what you want the character to be. You know the adage, show, don't tell? I think he's maybe showing too hard.
Yeah. I actually almost feel like this is a problem with the very, like, core of the idea of Jedi, because they are meant to be so wise, but in a lot of the stuff they're plotted in... I mean, if you have a set of characters who have, like, almost infinite combined wisdom, and they're meant to be so knowledgeable and so thoughtful and so, you know, calm and logical.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, even in the movies, they're like, oh, this kid's gonna bring balance to the Force. Not one of them stopped to be like, hey, did you notice the Force is, like, really heavily light-sided right now? Anyone pick up on that?
Yeah.
And it's like, you fucking Jedi, why don't you get the... So, I think...
Prophecies can mean more than one thing. Yeah. Especially when they're sold, you don't even know who said them.
And it seems like almost a problem with kind of the very conception of Jedi. Their existence is in some ways oxymoronic.
So I think this is an issue a lot of people have with Star Wars canon to a degree. Because so we have the movies, which are considered to be like ultimate canon, right? That's the stuff that George Lucas touched directly.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are that's the top of the pyramid, right? And then we have EU, and there's varying quality. The
extended universe,
extended universe,
novels and stuff that are authorized by.
So I think, I think this is the right thing to do. You want to imprint, you want to take what you read in the extended universe and compare it against what's in the movies. So we have these characters that, in the movies, the Jedi are the good guys. And there's not a lot of... There's so much flash, especially in the prequels. There's such a light show in the, not like light side, but there's so much flashing lights and exciting things that it's hard to see the subtext, the subtlety that's there. Like, you want to say, oh man, Jedi, they're the good guys. And especially people like me, like I like Star Wars from a from my child, from, you know, from being a kid and seeing Star Wars growing up. And so now, when I even when I see the prequels, I like them. The Jedi are the good guys, but the roles are like it's different in if you look at the original trilogy and the new trilogy, and then you look at the expanded universe together. In the new movies, the Republic really is like kind of they're kind of the bad guys because they're not evil in the same way that the Empire is, but they're very rigid.
They remind me of in Serenity and Firefly, the Alliance there. They're not necessarily evil. I mean, they're doing some bad things. You find out in the movie that they're trying to make people better, and that's an evil thing to do. That's just this side of eugenics. But for the most part, they just want to civilize the core worlds and make everything orderly and have a good system and make sure people get medical supplies. Like, they just want to do good in the end. And I think the Republic in episodes 1, 2, and 3 is like that. They have a rigid set of rules, they have a system, they have all this bureaucracy, and really they're just trying to make a system that everybody works with so that not every planet is the Hutt home world, just covered in slime and credits.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I actually ended up going back and watching episode 1 3 days ago or so, and they do some really unconscionable things, like Qui-Gon especially. Like, he's not a very nice Jedi. He plays with people's lives like they're nothing. Or the Jedi Council, they're kind of like, well, this is a huge problem, but, you know, we operate in a certain way, and we're going to stick to those rules, so get rid of the kid. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, well, if you know it's an issue, don't do that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, Qui-Gon, he cheats at gambling to take a child away from his mother, essentially.
Yes.
Because he thinks that he might be a good Jedi. He's like, you look like you. I like the cut of your jib, kid. So I'm going to cheat this flying bat guy, and then I'm going to take you from your mom.
And then you come back later, and you see the consequences of that. That guy's life gets ruined.
Yeah, Watto's life sucks. His mom gets kidnapped by sand people.
Yeah. So, I mean...
Sorry. What I was trying to say earlier in a very roundabout way is that think of... This is going to have no connection to what I said earlier. But think of the Jedi like any religion, right? There's different levels of practicing, right? So we have...
The Council at the top.
So they're like the Pope.
Yeah.
Okay? They set the rules, but they kind of oversee everybody, but it's so big, and they can't have their hands everywhere, right? And so these guys are like... they're like, I don't want to pick a religious group. I don't want to offend anybody.
We'll stick with the same structure. I mean, Pope, guy at the top, and then the middle tier, like the bishops and cardinals. Just because I'm not familiar with any other structured religion.
But these guys are very, they're like fundamentalist Jedi.
I guess. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah,
and I'm not trying to call out any specific fundamentalist religious group people out there in the radio.
Don't terrorize my apartment, please.
So they follow the scriptures to the letter. They say, "There's Sith are bad. We need to stop the Sith."
Yeah.
In any form. And so they even though they know that visions aren't necessarily...
Literal.
Or they act on anything because it might be... detrimental to the existence of the Jedi. So maybe that's what it is. They say, like, well, this guy in the red suit might be one of those kids, and just to be on the safe side, let's just handle this.
Yeah. It's just, and I mean, this actually brings up a really good thing that a lot of people don't see if they only watch the movies, and it's that Jedi doesn't mean good, and it can mean bad. Jedi just means that you're following a certain code, and it's like, you know, there is no emotion, there is peace. It's really Buddhist, actually.
Well, they're also supposed to... The Jedi Order is supposed to reflect, like, the Samurai Order and the Samurai Code. You have the Jedi Path, you have the Samurai Path. It's supposed to be a direct reflection of that, at least in the movies.
Like, even in these six issues, we see many different flavors of Jedi, right?
Yeah.
We see the Master, who's like Yoda.
A knight.
No, the guy who's like Yoda...
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Yoda species one. Yeah, okay.
And he's like, I think he's like the good, he's like the kind of Jedi we want everybody to be.
Yeah.
He's good, and he's wise, and he's not rash.
Yeah.
And then we see these guys who are like fundamentalists, and then we see squint for like a little bit in issue zero, and he is going against the Jedi Order to fight the Mandalorians because it's the right thing to do.
Yep.
Not necessarily fight Mandalorians, but protect the people that the Mandalorians are trying to
get.
Conquer.
Yeah.
But the Jedi Council doesn't agree with that. So we see all these different groups within the Jedi, and then we see Zane, who is a Padawan, but he kind of sucks. But his heart's in the right place, you know. He doesn't have the skills, but he believes in the Jedi Code. He wants to be a good Jedi. I mean, that's why he's working so hard to catch Marn at the beginning, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what he got tasked to do. That's his part in helping protect this world, is to get these low-life people who are causing problems with the economy.
And so we don't necessarily see all these flavors of Jedi in the movies, because there just isn't enough time in these movies, right?
Yeah, you don't want to make a $200 million film about the bumbling idiot Jedi. You want to make a $200 million film about motherfucking Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah,
I watched The Sad Jedi.
Well, yeah. We would now, but...
Well, we get Sad Jedi in the next comic. I don't know if
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. There's like all these different flavors and you know, these guys are like the militant. The dick consulars are kind of the...
Yes. As I have coined them in the notes, the dick consulars.
Yeah.
The council of dick consulars. I was proud of that one. So, and then we also get the other characters sort of in the second half of this trip. We get Camper and what's the chick's name?
Jor-El.
She's so hot. She's great.
Yes, she's a cool character. I really like where her character goes in this. By the end of the 50 issues, it's pretty great. But
well, I mean, by the end of this, she's the most complex character.
Certainly, and there's a lot of mystery around her still. You know, Camper rescued her. And now she protects Camper, and they're both hiding from something. Different things, presumably.
Yeah, she makes the point. Well, she tells Zane, have you ever thought that we wanted to go into hiding?
Yeah.
He's like, now I have to go into hiding, oh my god, this is going to be so terrible. And she's like, look, that's all we've been trying to do for like the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
We've been trying to hide, and now thanks to you, we're not.
Yeah, I'm really interested in finding out more about Camper's past, too, because... I mean, she says, like, Pereiro, right, is honored elder in Arcanian. And it's kind of like, well, he's just some crazy dude in a junkyard now. Who does he turn out to be? That's got to be exciting.
Have you read that far in the comic where you get Camper's backstory?
No, I haven't gotten his backstory.
I love Camper's introduction. Crazy motherfucker pushing a shopping cart. He's got, like, little, like, toy droids following him around. Like, just stuff that you know he tinkers with because he's fucking crazy. It's like the future droid version of the homeless guy with a three-legged dog. I mean, I know, it sounds fucked up, but I think that's what the art effectively conveys. Because if you don't live in an urban area like we do, like I walk to work every other day, at least on my walk to work, there's at least one person who's just walking around yelling as loud as they can into the air random stuff.
Yep.
Don't know what it is, don't know who they're talking about. Sometimes they're talking to people who are not even anywhere near them, and they're literally like yelling as loud as they can at nobody. So to see Camper walking around the shopping cart mumbling, yeah.
That's what
you see that.
Hobos are like.
And he's got like a crazy eye, too.
Yes, it's true, he does. And he's got like the drunk sparkles around him sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, he has Arcanian eyes, and they can see infrared, I think.
Oh,
most
really?
Of them, yeah.
Well, I mean, he's got, like, one eye that's wide
open. Yeah, it's like, oh.
One eye's wide open, one that's, like, kind of off to the side-ish.
Yeah.
I just want to give a minor spoiler about him, though. He's, like, a complete fucking badass. He takes out a Mandalorian in combat.
Well, I mean, by the end of this, he's pretty badass, too. I mean, what he does with the LB is pretty cool. He's like, I just stuck this other thing's head on it and reprogrammed this and did the... And it's like, you're fucking crazy, but I like you. I like you a lot.
He definitely has, like, weapon skills, though. He's got nunchuck skills, bow staff skills.
I want to see that. But she's got staff skills.
Yeah. She does. But then again, against Zane Carrick, it does not... Oh, Andy.
Sorry, I thought of that secondarily.
Anyway, around Zane Carrick, it doesn't seem that impressive, gotta say.
Yeah. So, the other thing that I think, need to talk about a little bit is... I know, I've heard this before. People say, I don't want to read the novels, I don't want to read the comic books. It's basically just glorified fan fiction.
Nuh-uh.
So I think we should have that discussion, because there are things in here that I think does support that statement.
Okay.
Such as, well, let's see. All of the names are funny because they're in space and they're aliens and everybody needs to have a funny name. And some of them are comical. You know, like Mar and Hieroglyph, right? It's just the side of hieroglyph and, I don't know, like names that sound similar but aren't. And really, there's pre-established convention in the Star Wars universe, in the fucking original episodes 4 through 6, that people can have normal names like Luke, Ben, Owen. You know, you don't need weird names. There's a lot of perfectly normal names in this universe, too.
No, only on Tatooine.
Apparently. You know, and there's stuff like that, and then there's always the required cameo by certain species. You know, Yoda was great in the movies, everybody likes Yoda, so you need to have a character in here who looks like Yoda. Everybody loved Chewbacca, so you at least gotta have a Wookiee in here for a panel or two doing the Wookiee War.
Oh, the Yoda dude is actually in KOTOR.
Yeah, like, and I know he's established in canon, too. And, I mean, there's not only one Yoda.
But, so, how much other EU stuff have you experienced, Andy?
Growing up, I read a ton of the books.
So, my primary experience with the EU is the comics. I've read a few of the novels, but mostly I've read a lot of the comics. And that's not necessarily true with some of the other stuff. Like, I don't think there's any Wookiees in Legacy, for example.
Okay.
There's no Wookiees, and there's no Yoda guys.
So then what separates this from fan fiction? Because if I'm a good writer, in quotes, and I have a friend who's a good artist, we could get together, we could make a comic, and we could throw it on the internet.
It's okay. Maybe the fact that it's sold by a legit, like an established publishing house, Dark Horse, legitimizes it, maybe? Mm-hmm.
I think it has to do with the number of tropes that appear.
There's no weird sexual relations in it.
Which is unfortunate.
Well...
No.
I'm talking about.
I am on your side here.
Because I think that's where a lot of fanfic devolves into sometimes.
Yeah.
No, I want to be perfectly clear. Today, with this part of our discussion, I'm being the devil's advocate.
Yeah, I know.
I totally am. Like I said, growing up, I read a ton of the books. I loved Timothy Zahn, The Heir to the Empire.
The only reason I brought up the sexual things is...
No, because the biggest fanfiction communities do go to weird sex town.
Yeah.
They do.
So I agree with you. I think that there is a lot of... This could be called fanfic by somebody. But at the same time, there is a certain level of legitimacy. Like, if you know, it has Lucas Books logo on there, right? And it talks about... I think in the beginning, it says... there's this guy named Leland... What's his name? Leland Chi, I think his name is. And he was hired by George Lucas to oversee
the continuity of the universe.
And his name is in here somewhere. I remember seeing it. Special thanks to Leland Chi, Sue Rostonian, Amy Gary at Lucas Licensing. So this is approved by Lucas at a certain level. Not George Lucas himself necessarily.
But somebody was hired specifically for the job of making sure that this fit the flavor of the universe.
So I think that if it didn't fit the flavor of the universe, it would be rejected. Or there would be, like, go back and fix these things. So I think that no matter how silly these things are, and, you know, there's Wookiees and stuff, but you can even say that about the movies. They didn't have to put Chewbacca in Revenge of the Sith for 2 seconds. It's almost like Yoda just dropped his name.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah. Oh, we're on Wookiee Town, so we're on Kashyyyk, so let's just throw Chewbacca in there.
And there's stuff like that in episodes 4 through 6, too. Like, when you're on Endor and Chewbacca does the, like, Tarzan yell as he's swinging across the jungle. Like, there is corny drop stuff in the original trilogy, too.
Well, the original trilogy is meant to be campy. Well, I don't know, meant to be, but it is campy.
It's campy in a charming way.
Yes.
There's campy for campiness' sake. This, I don't think the movies necessarily were campy to be campy. They just were that way because of production values and stuff. And it was charming. And everybody loves it.
And the other thing I would say, what I would say to people who would call something like this fan fiction is that saying that demeans the quality of the writing. And there are a lot of really good writers who see something. And I mean, this is probably the mark of a good creative writer, is you see something and you can think of a story for the characters only on the screen for a second. Like, in episode, was it episode 6, when Luke fights the Rancor, right? And after the thing's dead and Luke walks out, there's the Rancor handler runs in and starts crying. Like, that dude has a backstory. He's in the extended universe, there is, like, entire stories written about that dude and his relationship with that Rancor.
Well, I mean, look at Wedge Antilles. He's mm-hmm. He's in 4, 5, and 6. He survives every space battle, and there's volumes written about that guy.
One of the best series of extended universe books is about him.
Rogue Squadron, right?
Yeah.
He's the leader of Rogue Squadron, and he's this huge character in the expanded universe, but we just get seconds, flashes of him on the screen, and every time we see him, it's just him sitting in a cockpit.
And I really do think it's the mark of a really good creative writer that can see a character who's only on the screen for a couple seconds and only shows a flash of what their character is. And a good writer will imagine a background for that person.
I mean,
a good
creative writer. Like, clearly Wedge matters, because they could just put any person in these
shows.
Yeah,
you could have had Porkins show up in all three of them.
Well, Porkins dies, but...
I know, but I mean...
Well, or like Biggs, right?
Well, yeah.
Like Biggs Darklighter.
Yeah.
Let's just
go through all of the people in Red Squadron.
This is the problem with talking about Star Wars. So, like, Biggs obviously matters. Why did we name him or anything?
Yeah.
He could just be some other guy just like Porkins, some disposable pilot. But the Rebels matter, and so they... Clearly somebody could take the time to create a backstory for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
I just want to put out there that someone needs to make a story about Porkins being a Force ghost and, like, solving mysteries or something. I would read it.
You have to be a Jedi to become a Force ghost.
Or Porkins.
Maybe he is really strong with the Force.
Maybe.
Yeah, and they just don't know.
Yeah. No, I guess not every Force-sensitive kid gets to go to the Jedi Academy.
Well, I think, isn't it later revealed that even Han Solo is sort of Force-sensitive, and that's why he is so lucky all the time?
Mm-hmm. I think so, right? Because
I think that's in the extended
His kids are, like, super Force-sensitive.
Yeah, sensitive. But Andy, ancient weapons and a hokey religion don't beat a good blaster at
Well, that's what his belief, because he's raised in the Empire. You know, he's raised in the time of the Empire, so he doesn't believe in the Jedi. You know, just because I remember playing the original Star Wars CCG, and they had three levels. They had nothing, Force-sensitive, and Force-attuned. And Force-attuned was, like, Yoda, and Force-sensitive was, like, Leia. Hmm. You know? Like, in their blood, but latent. And Han Solo had Force-sensitive.
He didn't know it.
He just didn't know it, because he was raised in the time of the Empire.
I see.
So, there you go.
Thank you for that. Very insightful. Maybe we should talk about the actual story of this.
Yeah. Who are your guys' favorite character?
Zane. Okay. Definitely Zane, because Jedi plus raw sewage plus failure equals... it's just win! It's win! It equals win. Like, that was my probably favorite part in the first trade, where he just gets covered in sewage and he's like, ugh!
Yes.
Because that is, like, his character right there. He didn't die. He didn't get, like, any limbs chopped off. He was not maimed. He's just really gross now, and that's what happens when you're a shitty Jedi.
It's like he's okay, but in the most frustrating way possible.
Mm-hmm. And, I don't know, I think he was pretty badass at the end of issue 6 when he's like, I'm gonna get
Laying
you.
Down the decree. Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I really did like that. He's like, I don't care how much I supposedly suck. Apparently things have been going right for me more than they are supposed to because I'm getting hunted by 5 masters and I'm still alive. So motherfuckers, I'm coming back for you. Like, I like that. That was a good thing. What about you, David? Who was your favorite?
I liked Zane a lot as well.
Yeah?
I cared about him immediately from the beginning. Like, he's just, he's trying so hard to be a good... He knows he's not a good... He's not a skilled Jedi like the rest of the Padawans, but he knows that he has responsibilities, and he tries to fulfill them. And then by the end, we see that even though he's not skilled, he's very determined, and he's a smart guy.
Yeah, he's resourceful. He knows... And he knows... I think the wisdom is for him is in that he knows how inept he is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, of course I couldn't kill him. I suck!
Like, he knows...
And he doesn't bite off more than he can chew.
Yeah, exactly. He knows his limitations, and he knows where he has skills, So he works within that, and he's able to succeed in that way. So, I just think he's a... I think he's a very complex and interesting character. And we're going to see a lot out of him in the, you know, in the remainder of the series.
I think my favorite character... I'm split. I really, really like Camper, but I haven't seen enough of him to call him my favorite yet. I like his show up with his little puppy droids. That was adorable and awesome. I love his latent genius. Like, right now he's just like the savant guy, and I love that he's got this fucking big ass ship in the middle of a junkyard that can take off and fly. And I love that. I love the reveal, like, later on, or maybe it was just the writer not figuring it out. Where did the power go? I don't remember where the power went. We don't got shields, we don't have hyperdrive, but we got one big fucking gun. I know that personality, you know, like Camper's like, I don't need shields. I don't need hyperspace. If I can just shoot down anything that's following me, it doesn't matter if I have either of those. I just need one big fucking gun. Like, that's genius. I love that. But I don't know if I've seen enough of him to call him my favorite. I think my favorite is hot white skin chick.
Jor-El?
Yes. Not just because she's hot. She's hot like translucent skin chick. Because I really do think... I think at the end of this trade, she is the most complex character. I mean, we get Zane, and he's the main character of the story. But the bumbling hero is a bit of an archetype. And even though we've never seen it before with a Jedi, it still is an established archetype. And I kind of get a feel for him already. And I do like the way he's set up. And the way he's introduced is perfect. You get him right off the bat being so determined. And, like, he's got such a good idea for how to catch Marn in the first 3 pages.
Yeah.
And if he just hadn't gotten his fucking robe caught on the goddamn chair he was floating on, that just one unlucky thing wouldn't have happened, it would have gotten him. He would have been fine. But he didn't. And I like the way that's set up, but I think in terms of complexity and where the longevity of the character is going, by the end of this, I think Jor-El? I want to call her Jor-El, but that's not right. That's Superman's dad.
Jor-El.
I think she's set up to have the most complex character in her relationship with Camper, and the whole idea of her motives are the exact opposite of Zane. Now they're more in line. But in the beginning, she's like, I just want to hide. I don't want to be known by anybody. I want to make enough money to get by. I don't even want to know Marn, because he's shady and deals with shady people. And even though he's a decent guy in himself, maybe, he will bring non-decent people to me and the person I'm trying to protect. I like that she has her own motives entirely apart from what happens in the storyline. And the storyline just kind of comes crashing into her. I like that.
It's actually interesting, because I felt like Marn was set up to be the most complex, just because, like, at the beginning, he looks like any other smuggler. He's like, I want money, money. But it's really hard to see what's driving him to stay with Zane. And it doesn't seem like it's just a heart of gold or profit motive. And it adds really interesting, like, complexity to him. Like, he's by no means my favorite character, but he does seem like he has a good chance to be, like, really thought out and have good mm-hmm. depth.
I think he explains it best, too, when he explains to Zane, like, the whole thing of you being a losing hand and that sort of thing. And then when he ends up coming back for Zane, or I forget how does that work out, but when they end up coming back together, he's like, look, I'm snivy and I like playing games. I like playing games with money, and I was good at playing with crime. You know, like, it's a game that I'm playing, and right now you're more fun than trying to evade the police on Taurus would be. You know, I like that idea for a character, too. Definitely. There's a lot of really good characters in here. I think that's what makes it a good comic. What do we think about the art? We've talked so much about the writing.
It seems this is actually a comic book. There was, like, one part where it got really bad, and then it got better.
Yeah, I think it was kind of inconsistent. I mean, overall, it's pretty good. It's not like... I don't think it's like... there's not anything, like, super spectacular about it. But it's... I mean, it's not... It's pretty good quality, for the most part. Like, I don't have any real complaints about it.
Yeah, I think this is... I'm trying to think of a good way to describe this. And this is just... there's nothing great, but there's nothing wrong. This is sort of textbook how to draw a comic book.
Yeah, it's like pretty standard quality comic book art.
Like, I imagine if you could go to college and get a degree in how to draw a comic book, you would come out with this.
That's not to put down.
That's not bad at all. Ching. No.
You know, I'm sure he worked very hard on this. And it looks good. I mean, the characters come across well. He does a good job with detail and putting in little cutesy things, like the little droids with Camper and stuff.
Yeah. There are a lot of nice little touches. But by the same time, he doesn't ever take the risk or go for the big visual. There's maybe three full pages in this entire volume. Three or four.
I mean, maybe it's a challenge to draw something like Star Wars, because when you're drawing like a typical superhero comic like the Justice League or Avengers or something, everybody's humanoid, everybody's human-looking. You know, there's normal-looking Earth buildings and cars and stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this, there's so much variety. I mean, it's the same guy drawing Marn and Zane and the Ithorians and the Wookiees and these Zabrak swoop gang guys.
Yep.
And these five different Jedi Masters, they're all different species. So, maybe he...
I mean, there's difficulty in that, definitely, I think.
There's a lot of different things to do, and you can't say, like, okay, I just need to draw, like, a human shape here, necessarily. Mm-hmm. So, maybe that's part of it. Maybe they picked him because he's good overall, and he can hit all these different points well, you know.
Well, and you had said, too, that in 2006, all three of the comics we're reading for the series were printed in 2006. You're saying that's when, like, Dark Horse made its push to make Star Wars comics.
Yeah, I don't necessarily... I'm not sure exactly if this is when they started doing Dark Horse, but they started, like, publishing comics in earnest. Because back in the 80s,
there was, Marvel, like, a droids comic.
Marvel did, Star Wars comics. So, like, if you pick up the Star Wars Omnibus, and it's, like, the old stuff, it's actually published... It's Marvel's books, but they're being reprinted by Dark Horse.
Okay. And I think maybe the art here, because it's solid, basic comic book art. And I say basic just in the fact that it is the definition of comic book art.
It's like standard fare, right?
Yeah, not basic to demean it in any way. I think because if you make it too flashy, or you make it too stylistic, if you make it too gimmicky, then if this is your first push in how to do... This is your... As a publisher, this is your push for Star Wars. You don't want it to feel gimmicky.
You want it to feel familiar.
You want it to feel familiar, and you want it to be solid. I think if their first push was a stylized way... It was stylized in the way that, say, Clone Wars is stylized. Like Samurai Jack, you know, like that hard lines all over the place. Flat 2D. Sort of flat, like, paper 2D. That style is very much Clone Wars, and it identifies as Clone Wars. And if you make your initial launch like that, then that's the identity of your book. And not the Star Wars brand, and not the characters. Mm-hmm. But that art style becomes your identity. And I think they can do it with Clone Wars because those characters have established identities before the books are published. But here, if you
want to be able to say, look at the book, not read any of the words, and say, Zane is Jedi.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right? And Zane looks like this. And you can get this... the 3D sense of what Zane's face looked like. Because I'll tell you, Mace Windu in the Clone Wars books does not look that much like Samuel L. Jackson. Because there's not enough depth in that style of art to pull that across. But in this, you could. You could draw a guy to look like just like Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the main issue here, I feel like the coloring is really good, but the line art's too inconsistent. And he didn't do anything interesting with, like, the frames.
Yeah.
Like, it's always blocked off frames. There are very few splash pages. Like, very few frames that go to the edge of the page, that sort of thing. So, it's not even just, like, the style playing it safe. It's the layout and mm-hmm. I kind of wonder how much time they gave this dude to make this.
Yeah, that's probably another...
I feel like some of the line art just feels rushed.
Like, I'm kind of looking at it, and as Andy flips through it, I think there's too much shadow in the people's faces, too. Like, yeah. If I had to make one complaint, like, there's shots of, like, Zane from far away, and his eyes are just shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you can use that to convey certain emotion, but...
A heavy brow, sort of.
I don't think that's what's going on in some of these scenes where we see the heavy shading. But it's not such a problem that I would not recommend the comic, right?
Yeah.
That's just something that I don't particularly like. Some people like that kind of thing.
And I think to end the discussion of the art in this trade on a high note, the pages where we get the Seer's visions.
Oh, yes.
Those were really good.
Yeah, those are definitely the best.
I really
like
those.
Because we see a lot of variety, and we see the, I forget what species.
Miraluka?
Yeah, Miraluka, the ones that don't have eyes. We see how she sees using the Force, and yeah. I think that's pretty
interesting.
That
was really
cool.
And it does get very stylized, and we see, that's what makes me think that the style was mandated by an editor.
Mm-hmm.
Because whoever did this art can do really well stylized art.
Like we said earlier, I think this is was done on purpose because the primary audience for these like new Star Wars comics are existing Star Wars fans, right? So you want to make it easily accessible, and you can right away see this is Star Wars. I recognize these alien races. I know that these people are Jedi, and so
I mean, because that familiarity is what's drawing your audience to the comic.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm picking this up because I love Star Wars and I want to read Star Wars. And mm-hmm. if it doesn't look like Star Wars, then why am I reading it?
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to point those pages out because when I got to them, I was like, oh my god, this breaks the style, but it looks really, really good.
Yeah. Those were my favorite pages in terms of art by far.
Cool.
So let's rate this.
Okay.
I'll go first, since I never go first. I'll say 3.5.
Okay.
I really like it. The art is... we've been talking about the art's sufficient, I think. But I really like the characters, and I really like the idea for Zane, and I like where it's going to, where Zane is this vengeful hero, but he's not avenging himself against Sith or Mandalorians or Chiss or any of the other classic enemies of the Republic. He's doing it against his old order, and it makes it sort of nice gray area for good and bad within the Republic.
Yeah, and it's not really a revenge. I mean, you could say it's revenge. I don't necessarily think it's...
Justice, though.
Revenge. He wants justice to be served, and to that end, he has to prove that it wasn't him
mm-hmm.
who killed the other Padawans.
Because it's not just... I mean, he is saying, I'm going to hunt you down, but he's going to hunt them down until one of them confesses.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, the other side characters are really good, too. It's a good story, and I wanted to read Star Wars because I love Star Wars, and this feels like Star Wars, but it feels like it in a nice, new, fresh way. Which is really weird because I've been loving Star Wars for the better part of 20 years now.
Yeah.
And for something I've been reading and enjoying and consuming for 20 years to feel fresh again is awesome.
That's what I think is great about the expanded universe. And if you like Star Wars but you haven't really looked into it too much, I recommend that you do. And the comics are a great way to do it because, you know, novels can be kind of daunting. There are a lot mm-hmm. of pages. I know that really sounds sad, but comics are, it's easier to pick up a comic and just get a good, like, dip your toe in the pool of the expanded
Definitely.
Universe.
Well, it shows you things that you couldn't otherwise visualize, and mm-hmm. with something like sci-fi, that's really valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And yeah, I can't emphasize, the reason I'm giving it 3.5 is because it feels so fresh. I mean, take something that you've known and had a good grasp of for 20 years and try to reimagine it. Take a lamp. Right, just something basic. How would you do a lamp different to make a lamp feel fresh? At the end of the day, it's still going to be a fucking lamp.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's really difficult to do that. And I get this is more creative than building a lamp, but still, the idea gets across, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with a 3.5. I would rate it higher if it had more spectacular art, and so maybe that's the editorial decision by Dark Horse bringing the rating down, but I really do like it, and a 3.5, solid. Who wants to go next? Jen.
Okay. First off, you're probably going to get, like, our first email, and it's going to be from an angry lamp maker.
Happily.
Let's see. I would also say 3.5. I feel like there were inconsistencies in the writing and the art that made it weak in places. There were parts of the plot that weren't holes, but felt thin, and I was kind of like, hey, damn it, give me my full plot. It really bothered me how it times, like, the art went from being inconsistent to looking like it was drawn by someone entirely different, and it was, like, rather ugly, and then 2 pages later it was back to normal. Like, there's one panel where it's, like, Zane Carrick's head filling, like, the bottom of third of the page, and it's, like, super elongated and weird, and I'm like, ugh! So that bothered me, but I've read, like, the first 20 issues of this already in the past when it came out. And I'm going back and rereading them, and I'm probably going to read all the way to 50, just because it's fun and it's engaging. And I've also recommended this to a friend of mine. So, I mean, it's engaging enough that I want to take my time and read it again, and I want other people to take their time and read it. So, you know, can't say it's average, obviously. So yeah, 3.5.
Alright.
I'm also going to give it a 3.5. You know, it's a good Star Wars adventure. You know, and I think it's kind of challenging because we only read the first volume, and the way Dark Horse does their Star Wars comics is they say, okay, we're gonna do 50 issues. They're all 50 issues, and they fill the block.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's not, you know, the 50 issues are one long story. It's not like some other comics where you get like 10, and, you know, sometimes you get like 3 or 4 issues that cover one story, or like 10 that do another. So we don't get the whole story here, but I think this is a nice little introduction. And like Andy and Jen said, it's overall, it's good. I mean, it's not perfect. Otherwise, we would have given it a 5. But if you like Star Wars, I think you will enjoy this story. So definitely, if you like this a lot, go grab the remaining 45 or whatever issues. Because it's a good story, and I like, you know, I've read all of it already, and it's really cool the way it goes, and you get a lot more than just Jedi.
God, something's scratching in the back of my throat. Okay. All right, awesome. So, well, then, next week, we'll jump into Dark Times Volume 1,
mm-hmm.
which we're going to pick up. That happens between Episodes 3 and 4, right?
Correct. This is after the Empire is established. But it's pretty early still. There's still Jedi out there.
Okay. And I'm excited because it has Darth Vader on the cover, and I love me some Vader. So we'll see how this goes.
It's a young Vader, though, so it's very different than the movie Vader.
Okay. We'll see. We'll talk about that next week. I'll see how excited or not I am with him. But we're going to read Volume 1. So that's from 2006 by Wells Hartley and Mick Harrison. And I believe it only collects, like, the first 4 or 5 issues. It's actually...
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's a pretty short trade.
Well, the interesting thing about Dark Times is I've only been able to find the first 2 trades. So I don't know if they finished that series or what, but...
Well, we'll do some research and we'll come back next week and let everybody know.
We're only reading the first one, which exists, so...
Yeah, so that one shouldn't be too hard to find. So anyway, that's going to be next week. If you need help finding it, you can go to our website, www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. You can also, of course, always send us an email.
Which is atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
Or, you know, you can hit us up on Twitter, which is...
@APSupercast or www.twitter.com/APSupercast.
And as always, to make sure that you get your episode every single week, because I know you want to listen every single week, even if you didn't do the reading. You can subscribe on iTunes, and please do that. Or, you know, subscribe on... Winamp or whatever other podcast management system you want. Just subscribe. It's great. But letting you know because we are on iTunes.
Yes.
Yes. So, okay. We will see everybody next week.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Bye.
May the Force be with you.
Do they choose, like, Darth titles? Like,
I think they're given to them by their lord.
Yeah, but, like, where do they come up with this shit?
Some of them are, like, Darth Sidious sounds, or Darth Tyrannus sound, like, kind of badass. I think it's funny that a Darth has a Latin name, but... Like, Tyrannus, is that Greek or Latin?
Tyrannus would be Latin.
Yeah. So that's... But, like, and, like, Sidious is, like, Insidious, right? But, like, Vader is kind of like...
Yeah, what is that?
And then, like, Malak is nothing,
or
right?
Or Revan.
Or Plagueis. Darth Plagueis.
What was Exar Kun's other name?
I don't know.
Because everyone just calls him Exar Kun.
I don't know where the Darth title came from. That might be before... That might be after Exar Kun's time.
How long was he before Old Republic? Not very long, right? Because he was first Sith War, right?
And I think they even mention it in...
Yeah.
In the Sith story.
He's got to be, like, only 20 years before this.
No, because KOTOR is, like... KOTOR 1 is... No.
Well, wait. This is before KOTOR 1, because they're on Terrace, and it's not destroyed.
Yeah, this is...
Whoa,
yeah.
Terrace gets
oh,
destroyed.
You meant before this. I thought you meant before...
Before.
Oh, no, not before yeah. Tor. Because no. Tor is 200 years after... Or 300, something like that.
After KOTOR?
Yeah.
After
the first KOTOR.
This? Or before this?
It's way after this.
Okay. So
this is before KOTOR 1. KOTOR 2 is like 200 years after that, and Tor is right after KOTOR 2, I think.
Because you can go
yeah,
to Taris in
Tor, can't
you? The character who you... One of the main characters from the Bounty Hunter storyline that you meet right at the beginning, named Brayden, is actually in KOTOR 2.
Yeah.
And... As a young man, he looks older in Tor. Okay, so here it says some historians. This is from Wikipedia.
Best
some historians suggest that Darth is actually a corruption of the Rakatan word Daritha, meaning emperor. And then others note another Rakatan connection. The words for triumph and conquest is Dar, and death is Ta. So they leading to the theory that Darth is derived from Dar and Ta. Therefore means triumph over death or immortal. Given the Sith obsession with discovering the means to achieve immortality, this idea is not entirely without merit, at least on the surface. But others point out that the true meaning of Dar-Ta is conquest through death, meaning the conquest of one's enemies. It kind of goes on for a while, actually.
Darth title is pretty much like the equivalent of master, right, for Jedi. Or is it the same as knight?
I think it's the same as master, because I think a lot of them are lord.
Oh, yeah.
Because there can be more than one Sith. Well, it depends on which Sith you follow. So, like, in KOTOR and Tor, like, in the Old Republic universe, there's tons of Sith.
Well, yeah, because there was, like, one dude who was, like, new role, one master,
yeah.
One apprentice.
Darth Bane.
Yes.
Who did the rule of two. And so it was always one with power and the apprentice always craving power.
Mm-hmm.